Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and this is Media Talk. Coming up this week,
newspapers are desperate, And what they're going to do is they're going to see this as a silver bullet that's going to save them. They're going to put their effort into that rather than doing what they should do, which is strategically reinventing what they are for the future.
Charging ahead, we hear from Jeff Jarvis on the plans by the Sunday Times to make us pay online. Also in the podcast...
We don't have a TV. Oh, don't you, Fred Riley? But keep up to date by listening to the radio. That's the way to do it.
On the mic and on the make, an MP's report slams BBC Radio for overpaying its presenters. Surely some mistake. Plus, a shortlist is drawn up for ITV's new boss, but did the channel go too far by leaving its contestants in tears in Britain's Got Talent? And...
When asked, what do you do for a living? Your answer is, in a nutshell, I put a leash on people who spunk money up the wall.
James is gone, so it's an all-female final on The Apprentice. We'll discuss this and plenty more in Media Talk from The Guardian. Now, with Susan Boyle still in the Priory, we have two of our own podaholics here in the studio. Steve Busfield is the man in charge of The Guardian's media and technology coverage. You gave it all up years ago, didn't you, Steve?
I did, 12 years sober. Daily Mail drove me to it.
Making his debut in the pod, I'm delighted to welcome Steve Ackerman, Managing Director of the radio production company Something Else. So two Steves for the price of one. What's your addiction, Steve?
I'll just have whatever you're having,
okay,
Matt.
Thank you very much. Okay, this week we're going to start with the press.
Media Talk with Matt Wells on guardian.co.uk.
Now, hopefully by now you'll all have managed to listen to the latest edition of Media Talk USA. It's a particularly lively show featuring husband and wife team Laurel Toby and John Fine on the panel, which is a pairing that's given us a few ideas, Steve Busfield. Where's Janine Gibson when you need her?
Having listened to Media Talk USA, I am not coming on this show with Janine.
Okay. Enough marital strife already. Yeah, you're right. Okay. We thought that the best way to raise our game here in London would be to give some airtime to Media Talk USA's presenter and all-round new media guru, Jeff Jarvis, because he was in Guardian Towers this week, and if there's one thing that gets him going, it's the idea that newspapers can somehow make their users pay for the news online. But it's an idea that is the talk of the town in newspaper land at the moment. A group of US publishers has got together to discuss the issue, raising fears and accusations of cartel. And over here, it's been reported by Media Guardian this week that the Sunday Times is planning to launch a standalone website, and that users will have to pay for at least some of its content. I asked Jeff why charging was now back in fashion.
The desire to charge is back in fashion. The problem is I don't know whether there's really a business there. Because the problem is no one's talking about the bottom line. They're not talking about the profit in the P&L. They're just talking about the revenue line. And we used to get revenue from the consumers, so by God, they should pay us again. But I've never seen a business model that's built on the verb should. They will, they won't, and where's the better way to make money? The Times got rid of Times Select in the U.S.
This is the New York Times,
because they obviously could make more money by getting more audience and more advertising. And when you charge people money, there's also a marketing cost involved. And finally, the other cost of putting content behind a paywall is that you lose precious Google juice. If content doesn't get links and clicks, it will not be discovered in Google. You will lose audience that way, too.
But surely, if enough newspaper owners or enough media owners, whether they get together in the ways that they're doing in the States, which is being accused of being a cartel or whatever, if enough people decide that the only way to make revenue from this new world is to charge, then people will have to pay.
You're working in an old world. All it takes is one person to ruin it. One party can ruin it. And while everyone else is charging, what you've done is, if I'm the free one, you've just built my market share.
Right.
And that's what's going to happen here. And newspapers famously don't get along well. They don't play well with others. And so someone is going to ruin this for them, assuredly.
But Rupert Murdoch, so are you saying that Rupert Murdoch, when he says that we have got to start charging for this stuff or we're finished, he's wrong?
Yes.
Because he's not been wrong in the past.
Oh, yes, he has been. I used to work for his digital venture when he bought Delphi, and it was a bloody disaster, and everyone forgets that.
Yeah.
Murdoch is brilliant in a lot of ways. He has the Australian seat-of-the-pants management. He talked about taking down the paywall at the Wall Street Journal. The economy turned sour, so you're glad to have the revenue they do have. The Journal is an anomalous product.
Well, no, it's not, because the FT charges for...
Name
for
five.
Content. Okay, so it's the FT and the Wall Street Journal.
That's pretty much it, and they're both about business and about making money, and there are expense accounts involved. So in any other area, I just don't see payment working. I think that newspapers are desperate, And what they're going to do is they're going to see this as a silver bullet that's going to save them. They're going to put their effort into that rather than doing what they should do, which is strategically reinventing what they are for the future.
Okay, but some newspapers are trying to strategically reinvent themselves. I would say pretty much every newspaper group in Britain is trying to reinvent itself somehow, aren't they? So and the big groups in the United States are doing it as well. They are, I mean, surely, aren't they?
Well, they put themselves on the web. The New York Times is very good. The Washington Post has done lots of good things. But the regional papers across the country put their stuff on the web and added comments. Hmm. That's pretty much it. And to me, what does reinventing mean? If you go to the Guardian's API, not to suck up to the Guardian, but really the Guardian is leading in this area, that says rather than putting our content behind a closed wall by doing an API, an application programming interface, and enabling others to build sites.
So this enables developers to build stuff
on Guardian
content. Yeah, okay.
And there are rules. You have to be part of the ad network and so on. But what that does, I think the words of Emily Bell or Alan Rusbridger or both, is that it puts the Guardian.
They are one of the same people.
In the fabric of the web.
Okay.
So you go and you distribute yourself to those who are not going to come to you. It just changes the basics of the brand. The idea that media brands are magnets and you have to come to us, not on the web. There was this famous quote in the New York Times a year ago from a college student who said to a researcher, "If the news is that important, it will find me."
Yeah.
And that scared the hell out of everybody in the industry. But what it means is you can't expect people to come to you, first off, and then come to you and go over the paywall. You're going to shrink and shrink and shrink. What this is really about, Matt, is milking the cash cow of the newspaper.
And it's a dying cow.
Yes, it is.
It's a cash cow on its last legs.
Yes.
Which I think you said. People are panicking.
Absolutely. That's what's going on right now. And so I think what's going to happen, too, is there are going to be disruptors who come in. I'm working on a project at the City University of New York in new business models for news. And we're trying to present a credible business model for an ecosystem that includes hyperlocal blogs and all this stuff I blather on about.
Yeah. You have been, as the guests on your podcast said, you've been going on about this for years now. Still
it's finally happening, Matt. I swear it's happening, and we'll prove it. But I think what's going to happen is the newspapers are going to see that others are opportunistically going to come in and disrupt them worse. They're weak. They're desperate. It's not hard to steal a business now. And the newspapers, the irony of this, in the new economy, whether you're a newspaper or a car company, the advantage used to be that you had the infrastructure, you had the printing presses or the factory. Now that is a distinct disadvantage. And others can come in without that cost burden of studios and printing presses and buildings and can build a news product for much less cost. And I think we're going to see that starting to happen.
Jeff Jarvis there. MediaTalk USA is ready to download for free if you haven't got it already at mediaguardian.co.uk or on iTunes. As one listener on the blog put it, great show, much better than the smug UK version as typified by the slimy, loathsome Matt Wells. You really did say that. I don't know what you mean.
And the new editor.
Yeah. Anyway, Steve Busfield, let's pick up on that final point that Jeff made. The old print industry, he says, is desperate, and the type of moves typified by the Sunday Times is an example of that.
There's a lot of points that Jeff raised when he talked about milking the cash cow. I think it has got further than that. I think it's about news organisations trying to work out how on earth they are going to keep going. What we do costs a lot of money, and all of that revenue has disappeared. Now, when he talked about Murdoch and how he's had some spectacular failures, well, yes, it's true, but he's also done a lot of gambles that later on have paid off. I mean, who is to say that actually, if he didn't do this now, and we all said, oh no, that's a bad idea, 10 years down the line, he's got a tenth of the readers of everybody else, but he's got 10 times the revenue, we'd all sit there and think, oh, I wish we'd done that. He is a man who, I remember reporting on Sky more than a decade ago when it wasn't making a lot of money and it was investing billions. When it wasn't making money and it was investing billions in football. And now look at it. Everybody thinks, actually, look at that model that he created. Look at the money that they keep on taking. Look at ITV in comparison. I don't think you can say there's absolutely no way that this can work. I mean, Jeff is an evangelizer in free content on the web, and that's how it's been, and that's what people are used to. But if you look at some very close models to that, I mean, if you look at mobile telephone technology, for instance, they make enormous amounts of money from very small bits of content. So, So people are still prepared to pay for some things. It's just a question of working out what they're prepared to pay.
Steve Busfield's point about micropayments and the mobile industry is interesting, because it's not the case that everything on the web or everything online or everything mobile is free, is it?
It isn't, but I think that is the exact difficulty here, that the argument seems to be that you can persuade someone to pay for something based on the brand value of that newspaper as opposed to necessarily the content that they're offering. And the difficulty to me seems to be that most newspapers are offering similar amounts of content. I could see an argument where potentially the Media Guardian could charge subscription because it's offering a niche service.
Well, and this is on the same model as the Wall Street Journal or the Financial Times, because what you get from them, you don't get from others.
Exactly. And this is really, I think, the thing that mobile companies have discovered. When they first started out down the content route a few years back, they were very broad, and they very quickly come to realise that content that can be accessed elsewhere isn't going to be paid for on mobile, because there's no real reason to pay for it.
There's a good piece by Shane Richmond on his blog at the Telegraph website, where he quotes a Price Waterhouse survey that says people won't pay for content not just if there's stuff of equal quality elsewhere, but if the comparable stuff is just good enough. You know, he says that the report shows that consumers want sufficient quality, not equal quality. So it's not even that there's the same, you know, if you charge and there's stuff out there that's the same quality, it can be a bit less good, and people will go for the free stuff than the paid for stuff.
I think Jeff touched on the point that really you need everyone to play ball, or no one does. Because if you've got only one or two papers who are charging for content, then I think it's absolutely right that it plays into the hands of those who are offering similar news content and comment for free.
And then all that has to happen is someone new can come along and then and provide it all for free, you know, because they are then going to be the upstart, aren't they? So I mean, you're screwed either way, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and there was the discussion about whether the American talks were about forming a cartel, and you know, in essence, I think you probably would have to form a cartel in order to get everybody to agree to do it,
and that's not allowed.
And that's not allowed. And so otherwise, you know, the way that British newspapers and, you know, and the media around the world behaves with itself is the fact that, exactly as the other Steve says, one bunch would put it behind a paywall, the other lot would immediately say, hey, come and read our stuff, it's free.
Yeah, okay. Well, you can read plenty more on all of this at mediaguardian.co.uk. I'm Matt Wells. This is Media Talk. Coming up, we'll ask, are BBC radio presenters paid too much? But first, let's do a few news and briefs. Steve Sharman, who follows us on Twitter, he's asked us to delve into the decision by the BBC Trust to postpone its judgment on Project Canvas. Now, Project Canvas is this joint venture by the BBC, ITV and BT to deliver internet television, including all their catch-up services and so on, to the TV screen rather than the PC monitor. It looks like B Sky B have thrown a spanner into the works, as far as I can see, by objecting to some of the aspects of all of this. The BBC Trust has said that they're going to put it off, and they want more details from the BBC BBC management about what it all means. Steve Sharman says it looks like the Trust thinks the work on the Canvas cartel is too important to go on behind closed doors. The other thing that's come out this week is YouTube XL. Now, YouTube have announced that they're going to do a new version that'll go on the TV screen. Steve Ackerman, are you a big YouTube fan?
I'm an occasional YouTube fan.
Can you see it? I can't see it working on the.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Surely the joy of YouTube is exactly the way you consume it at the current time. And I'm just not sure really how that translates to the big screen. Again, really going back to the argument we were having about newspapers, unless there's exclusive content there that you can't get elsewhere.
Well, I guess broadcasters have been using YouTube, haven't they, to promote their shows and stuff. So you can see how broadcast stuff that's on YouTube might work on the TV, but the vast majority of stuff that's on YouTube works well because it's not particularly good quality. It's free and cheap and dirty, and it works fine on that tiny little screen in the computer.
And I was having a play with YouTube XL yesterday, actually, and I was watching something that had clearly been recorded from broadcast television. It was, in fact, The Smiths. and the quality of it was terrible. I was sat looking and thinking,
but if you scale it
in a world where you've got big screens and high definition, and you know, all of a sudden you've got this terrible grainy web image blown up huge. It's, you know, it's wasn't very enjoyable to watch.
No, quite. Well, a reminder off the back of that, that you can follow us, like Steve Sharman, on Twitter. Just search for my name and you should get us pretty easily. It's great to hear what you want us to talk about. And we're accused often of being too obsessed with things like Britain's Got Talent and not discussing the serious issues of the media. Steve Busby's laughing. But there is a serious issue raised by the show this week, which is the treatment of its contestants. Here's a line from the producer and presenter Daisy Goodwin in this week's Broadcast magazine. She says, there's an interesting moral question for everyone in telly about why the most popular programme on TV is the one where children cry and a woman with learning difficulties is shown at the end of her tether. If I was making the show, I would consider raising the age limit. I'd also question why there was no psych testing. Well, I'm not sure if there is psych testing or not, but Steve Ackerman, what do you think about her points?
Well, I think the... I think for me, the more uncomfortable aspect has actually been the question of children, because without doubt, the moment when, was it Rosie, or I can't remember her name, but the little girl who burst out crying happened to be a moment I was watching, and it was incredibly uncomfortable. And it went beyond the moment where you felt compelled to watch. It really was, you know, very uncomfortable viewing, and actually, to their credit, very well handled, I thought, by Anton Deck.
Right.
But it does raise some very uncomfortable issues, and I think it's been interesting to see the way Piers Morgan especially has been wheeled out to try and defend the show. I mean, he came up with this incredible quote saying how it's no different for these young kids as it is for his kids being in a school pantomime at school. And you think, well it is. It's about 20 million people different. So there is an increased pressure there that doesn't quite stack up.
And
I think it does lead to questions about should there be some sort of protection? Should there be an age barrier? Where does the line get drawn between good entertainment and something that's making money for Simon Cowell?
Do you, Steve Russell, do you think it's uncomfortable? I mean, I blame the parents.
Well, I mean, you know, maybe this is another one of those where it's a media mountain out of a molehill. Because what was it that Ofcom revealed yesterday? They'd had 16 complaints about Susan Borsa. You know, so clearly,
but then they get,
you know,
thousands of complaints about completely spurious things. I mean, you know, I don't think we should
use that as a measurement.
No, the views of the general public as,
but you know, but look at the millions who watch it, and you know, and it is one of the gripping aspects of these TV shows, and that's why they're successful, and that's why people keep on watching them. You know, the shall
people
we say
watch
slightly
people
slightly
watch public hangings. Yeah. So, your arguments, these are terrible arguments that you're advancing,
but they're, you know, there's slightly delusional people who sort of go on to, you know, X Factor and whatever, thinking that they're going to be famous, is one of the most entertaining parts of those shows. I mean, you know, that's one of the things that they play up.
Interesting fact, Piers Morgan is on Desert Island Discs this week, if you're interested. Sticking with ITV, headhunters have been sounding out candidates for the new chief executive's job, Steve Busfield. No real surprises. Stephen Carter, a dark horse, perhaps?
Stephen Carter. Well, he's got to get Digital Britain through first, hasn't he?
And yes. Well, that'll be done by 16th of June, I think. And then
if the Labour government, you know, has time to do it in between collapsing. I mean, you know, who on earth would want that job? Is the first question, surely? Stephen Carter's got quite a nice gig at the moment. Would he necessarily want to go walk into a place where, you know, where he'd still have Michael Grade as overseeing him?
Home Secretary or Chief Executive of ITV? Which job is worse?
The ITV one might last longer, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Back to Twitter, and Scott Matthewman wants us to cover the revelations this week about ITV asking Sky if they'll take ITV 2, 3 and 4 on subscription. What's this about? Steve Busfield, is about revenue for ITV again, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going back to the discussion we were having a few minutes ago about, you know, big media companies and how on earth they pay for what they do in the new world.
But ITV2 has become the most popular digital channel in Britain, built off the back of Freeview, surely.
It has, absolutely. But that's the argument that you then take to the pay TV bosses and say, look, hey, how would you like the most popular digital channel? I mean, the fact is that, you know, that if you put it onto there, it would lose half of its viewers immediately because it wasn't on Freeview, and it would probably end up being less popular than Sky One, which, you know, which carries a lot of good content on it, but because of where it is not going to break into that mass audience. It's trying to work out whether you make more money from fewer viewers by doing it that way than, you know, than the declining advertising revenue that you're getting for your mass audience.
Okay, we'll leave that there. Leave your comments on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. That's where you'll also find details of how to get yourself a seat in the audience at our first live show coming up in July. Do come along if you're in London. We're recording it in front of a live audience, as I say, here at The Guardian. It would be great if you wanted to be part of it. The BBC has been accused this week of paying radio presenters like Jonathan Ross, Terry Wogan, Chris Moyles and John Humphreys too much, and giving MPs misleading information about the salaries of some of its biggest stars. A report by the House of Commons Public Accounts Select Committee is highly critical about the BBC's reluctance to open up its books to further public scrutiny, and BBC Radio often paid its on-air talent, quote, more than twice what commercial radio stations are paying their presenters, unquote. Conservative MP Edward Lee is the chairman of the said committee. He had this fruity exchange with John Humphreys on Radio 4's Today programme.
Surely we, the public, who pay your salaries, John, should have an idea of what you earn. I mean, you do a very good job, but for instance, do you earn more than the Prime Minister, John?
Well, I'd love to be able to tell you that.
Well,
but
why don't you? Well, you're here. Because, it's a free country.
Well,
let's have a good conversation. I think you do an excellent job.
Well, that's very kind of you.
Why shouldn't you earn more than the Prime Minister? But as for paying your salary, it'd be quite nice to know.
And then, well, it's
after all, John, I mean, you're a great man, but how many of these presenters are just famous for being famous? Surely if the public knew what they were being paid, we could actually drive down costs. There are many younger people who may want to come on and present the Today programme. You could do it perhaps just as good well as you for less money.
I'm sure that that's true. And as far as most presenters are concerned, and I'd include myself in that, I think you'd find that we would say, by all means, but we're not going to, as it were, break ranks because it's for the BBC
Absolutely.
To make this decision.
Oh, no, John,
we're freelancers.
I'm not blaming you entirely. God forbid that I would ever criticise you. But I'm blaming these men in grey suits in the BBC who run a corporation which we entirely pay for through a poll tax with a licence fee. When you go and buy a television, you can't say, well, I don't want to listen to BBC or watch it, I just want to look something else. No, you have to pay this tax. Surely we should have a right to know what's going on. Isn't this the buzzword at the moment? Transparency?
Brilliant. It's not often you hear John Humphreys lost for words. Steve Ackerman, you know a thing about the radio industry. Surely, as one user pointed out on the Media Guardian blog, this committee has got it wrong. You can't just replace Terry Wogan with Steve Pank on the 10th of the salary and expect the audience to stick with the show.
I think there's three things here. The first one is, it doesn't seem a coincidence to me that just as MPs are wallowing in the mud, they're trying to suddenly distract and point the finger elsewhere, because this is the second or third time in recent weeks we've heard this story surface. And
there was Lord Fax turned on Carrie Gracie on the news channel,
exactly.
and she rather bounced her into revealing her salary, rather surprisingly.
Which Humphreys, to his credit, didn't fall for. But clearly that's the first thing. The second thing is, which presenters on commercial radio are the committee comparing it to? Because there's a big pay disparity between the local jock in Hull and what Johnny Vaughan's going to be earning on Capital. I think the third thing is, actually, no presenter shouldn't be forced to reveal, because I do subscribe to the argument that I think Maggie Brown was saying here a few weeks ago, which is potentially you raise some very difficult employment issues if you're making public the salaries of people who aren't elected politicians. They are employees of a broadcasting organisation.
There was one interesting line in this report, which I'm just reading from Maggie Brown's piece on it on Media Guardian today, actually. There's no obvious core skill for presenters that cannot be found by seeking out new talent.
Yeah, I almost fell off my seat when I read that. I mean, what a nonsense. I mean, we might be able to say the same for most MPs, actually. So.
There's no obvious... I think in this studio, perhaps there might be no obvious core skill for presenting. But then I'm not paid nearly as much as John Humphreys, nor indeed nearly as much as Carrie Gracie, it has to be said.
Let me play devil's advocate and say...
Thought you were about to ask me how much I'm paid, then. You probably know, actually.
That clip was
That
clip was fantastic because actually he was Humphreys was being monstered in the manner that he often
was
is,
monstered, yes.
And he was evasive in the manner that he often accuses politicians of being. Actually, I, f- find myself bizarrely thinking, why should a radio presenter be paid more than the Prime Minister? I mean, that is a perfectly decent, you know.
Well, you could argue that the Prime Minister isn't paid all that much compared to people who do similarly responsible jobs. But having said that, it is interesting to pose the question, or to at least think of the consequences about what would happen if all these salaries were published. Steve Ackerman, you say it would be a commercial disaster, but actually, would it? I mean, would it be so bad if Steve Busfield, if all BBC presenter salaries, or say everyone who's paid over £250,000 or whatever, if those were published, would it be so bad?
I'm fairly certain that it would drive further down the cost of talent. I mean, that's what's happening at ITV at the moment. They seem to be renegotiating pretty much all of their deals. And I mean, maybe Steve Penk is not worth a tenth of Terry Wogan. And
Steve Penk,
would he get a tenth of the audience? I mean, if he got half the audience, isn't there an argument for a recalculation there?
You know what, though? I'm not convinced it would drive down the price of talent. I think it would drive down the price of the very highest paid. But once you make salaries public, don't forget, and we run a talent agency, so I'm thinking with an agent's hat here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about then, this is interesting, yes.
Once you know the salaries of everybody, as an agent, you're obviously going to be pushing for the same pay as someone you believe to be of an equivalent worth.
So it could drive
And it could drive up, therefore, up. The average pay. There is a logic there if you think about it. It's actually the same equivalent to you find with footballers, where salaries often are known, and a footballer will say, because so-and-so's getting 70 grand a week, I deserve 70 grand a week, even though I'm only on 40 grand a week at the moment. And often the clubs do have to cave in to keep that talent. And I think you'd find a very similar scenario.
Before we leave the subject of radio, because we've got a proper radio professional in the studio.
I'll be careful with the use of the word proper.
Yeah, there are a few other radio stories. Birdsong is ending. This is the radio station that was just full of Birdsong, which is a very British institution, I suppose. One which our very own twitching radio correspondent John Plunkett will no doubt miss, because there's a new national DAB station going on air. Isn't that exciting, Steve Ackerman?
It really should be, because it's original content.
What's it called again?
I can't even remember, unfortunately.
It's not absolute, but it begins with, because that's already on the air, but it begins with A. I can't remember.
It's worthy. It's new music. It's only unsigned artists. Is it going to get an audience? No,
never mind. You know, remember, producer Ben, you're meant to save me in these circumstances. What's it called? Producer Ben has revealed that that radio station, which we were struggling for the name for, is called Amazing.
That's the one.
That's the one. Very good. If you've no doubt you've got views on what we've had to say, give us your thoughts. Go to the blog, usual place, guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. It's an honour to be joined by Gareth McLean, The Guardian's TV writer and
an honour.
It is an honour, yes.
An honour.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Why are you wearing shorts when it's the coldest day of the week?
Because it's still quite warm.
Is it?
Okay. Well, I'm Scottish, so this is positively balmy for me.
Possibly Caribbean. I know you're not a fan, Gareth, but we can't finish this week without talking about The Apprentice.
Well, I've sort of come round to The Apprentice.
Okay.
I'm sure that the all-female sort of bit at the end is in no way to do with Sir Alan being accused of sexism last year.
Yeah.
And the year before that.
No, but he's really toned down the act this year, hasn't he? He's every week there's some... Well, like this week, it was all about... Oh, it really annoyed me this week. He was going on about...
It was
no good to be rude in the workplace, and you can't be a bitch in the workplace.
Oh, see, that's
like this is coming from the man who's the rudest man in Britain.
Praise from Caesar.
So it's the final. Why have they moved the Apprentice final? Should every other show edition of this series has been on a Wednesday, the final's on a Sunday?
There's a TV chain taking place. The football is happening next week with England on ITV on a Wednesday.
But didn't they know?
England are playing Azerbaijan or someone. Anyway,
I think you'll find it's Kazakhstan.
Kazakhstan. Thank you, Gareth.
So, I got a football question, right?
It's Kazakhstan on Saturday.
Oh.
And it's Andorra.
Andorra, okay. But as a result of that, The Apprentice has to move to a Sunday. And as a result of that, Alan Carr's new chat show on Channel 4, which was going to launch this Sunday, has now been bumped back a week so that it doesn't have to go up against The Apprentice. Apprentice?
Well, I'm sure that the people who watch The Apprentice don't want to watch England playing bloody Andorra.
I do.
Okay.
I think you'll find The Apprentice skews male.
Okay, does it? Well, there we are. So The Apprentice is on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Britain's Got Talent, but we were talking about that earlier. That's finished. And now, at the time of podding, which is Thursday at the moment, but when people are listening, it'll be another day.
Mm.
Big Brother will have been on or is coming on. It's very difficult to do this.
Oh, yes. Well, shall we just say that once this goes out, I can wave at you from inside the house.
Will you be sleeping on the floor? Because they have to sleep on the floor, apparently.
I will not be sleeping on the floor. I've got my own little bed. Okay. I'm actually going to hang myself from a hook in a sleeping bag.
There is... Which series is it? Is it 10?
10.
Oh, dear Lord.
Does that make you feel old?
It sort of does, yes. And
well, that and the grey hair.
Some people in the office are signing a pledge not to watch Big Brother this year.
Are they? Well, these are the holier-than-thou lot, aren't they? Yes. Ooh, we didn't know what you did this year. But so does that mean we'll be cutting back our Big Brother coverage?
Well, Steve Butters, you're in charge of media coverage.
We have indeed been having this discussion in the office, you know, whether Big Brother 10 is, you know, is just gone too far.
Yeah.
We are live blogging the opening night, and I'm fairly certain that, you know, that there will be a crew of people along who, you know, who enjoy it and, you know, and let them enjoy it.
The big innovation of the Guardian live blogs is now you don't have to hit refresh to the page to renew. That's such a good innovation. I'm really pleased with
that. Isn't that the only exercise you get?
Yeah, well, there is that. This is a tragedy because this is the last time that you and I will be together.
Oh.
At least on air.
At least on air, that's correct.
You know, there is a light that never goes out, which is...
Yes?
A Smith song.
Oh, yes, it is.
Because what's been happening?
Because Chris Packham, who is starting to look alarmingly like Michael Portillo, I think... has been slipping in...
Smith song titles into the into Springwatch, hasn't
he? Oh, no, I was going to say slipping into Kate Humbert.
Well, he did... This is the thing, because...
He did do that.
No, he didn't do that, but he did say a rather rude Smith song title to Kate Humbert, and she was a bit surprised, wasn't she, Steve Busfield?
Yeah, and then a Paul in Longacre suggested that Media Guardian readers would like to suggest some more Smith songs that could be slipped into Springwatch, as it were.
And what
and,
do we have?
And I'm trying... I just remember some of them. But seriously, go and log on. They are fantastically funny.
Okay. Because of that slight detour around Springs, what I was going to say, Gareth, is because you're leaving.
I am indeed.
I'm leaving before you.
You are.
Yeah,
you're not coming back.
I'm not going to be here for the next 3 weeks because I'm going to pick up our Webby in New York.
Ooh.
Which is very nice. But so I was going to ask people, and I will ask people on Twitter as well, I have to give a 5-word speech. Because you're only allowed to give maximum 5 words to accept our Webby for...
Is that because everyone's got such a short attention span?
That's right. So I'm going to be looking for suggestions for 5-word speeches. And then by the time I'm back, you'll have taken the money and run.
I will indeed. I'm off to the Telegraph.
So thank you very much for your contribution.
Oh, no, you're more than welcome.
Good luck in your new career.
Thanks.
You can post... That's it. I was going to say, this is my way of wrapping it up. Thank you very much to Gareth McLean, to Steve Busfield. Steve Ackerman, did you enjoy your first... Media talk.
It was interesting.
Okay.
damned with faint praise.
You know what? Fucking come back in.
I thought we'll be cutting that out.
Leave that bit in.
You can post your feedback on any of our topics on the blog. Usual place, guardian.co.uk/media talk, or head over to our newly rebranded Facebook group.
That's where all the money's been spent.
They've just changed the name.
Oh.
I'm on holiday, as I say, for a few weeks, so I will leave you in the capable hands of Stephen Brooke, who literally can't wait to get himself into hair and makeup. Good luck to you. Good luck to you, Brookie. In the meantime, you can still follow me on Twitter. Have a search for Matthew Wells. Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. See you soon.